Anyway, you got your poem, so, you know, today is, and I get confused between my Michigan and New York accent. Is it Poem Sunday or is it Palm Sunday, you know? But I know it's, you know, it's Poem Sunday, not only because you got your poems, but I got a tie on. And you come next week for Easter, I'll bust out a suit. All right, so, anyway, you know, did you know that Holy Week, I think most of you know this, but I just thought I'd bring it up again, that Holy Week, originally, when it happened with Jesus, happened on Passover. And that's really something that I like to remind people about. If you really want to understand the Bible, you're going to have to understand Jewish culture, especially first century Jewish culture. That's why we have the flag of Israel up over here. It's not Rome, it's not Spain, it's Jewish, it's Israel. And but about 300 years after Jesus died and rose again from the dead, to be exact, the year 325 is what it's recorded as, there was a church board meeting. Now, I don't know if you've ever been to board meetings, especially church board meetings. They can get kind of interesting sometimes. And this one was one of those kind of board meetings where they decided they didn't want to have Holy Week on the original time that it happened. We don't want to have it during Passover anymore, so we're going to move it. And so they came up with one of those simple solutions that usually end up happening at one of those church council or church board meetings. And here's what they decided to do. We're not going to have it at Passover anymore, where it originally happened. Here's where we want to move it to. Let's move it to the first Sunday after the first full moon occurring on or after the vernal equinox. I don't even know what vernal is, man. I mean, it sounds like a disease, you know? Jeez, you don't look good. You got a virus? No, worse, a vernal. Yeah, you better go see the doctor, man. I mean, what is that? Okay, I looked it up and I felt even more confused. It's the as the sun crosses the celestial equator. I mean, what is that? You know what it is? I'll tell you what it is. It wasn't a disease that was getting into the church. It was something worse. It's called anti-Semitism. Nasty stuff. You know what? Religion is weird, man. You know, what is that? You're worshiping the very people that the one you claim to worship, you hate. The one who he's from, you hate those people. When you have religion for God without relationship with God, it's dangerous. It's weird. Jesus said, you know what it's like? It's like a whitewashed tombstone. It sometimes kind of looks good with all its pomp and circumstance on the outside, but man, you get a look on the inside, it's dead men's bones. And dead men have dead committee meetings. I heard once that a committee meeting is when you get a group of people together and you assign one of the people to be the secretary to record the minutes while the committee wastes hours. And I think churches have been pretty good at that and quite honestly been there, done that. You know, guilty as charged. And it's just like, God, help us. Help me. You know, it's like committees can waste time, but ministries change lives. Jesus had a ministry. Jesus not only changed lives, he changed history. Some people say committees waste time, but ministries get things done. Man, you want to talk about a ministry that got things done. We're launching in today the most unprecedented 7 days in all of human history. Jesus accomplished more in 7 days than what's ever been accomplished in human history. Actually, he accomplished in this one Holy Week more than he accomplished in his old ministry. And you read the Gospels, they obviously thought the same thing. You look at the Gospel of John, 21 chapters, almost half of his Gospel. 3 years of ministry, what does he do? He focuses half of his gospel on the last 7 days of his life. Obviously, he thought those were pretty important 7 days. You get up to chapter 12 on, it's all about the last 7 days. You go into Mark, it's almost the same thing. He's only got 16 chapters. But you get up to, I think it's around chapter 11, it's nothing about those last 7 days again. Close to half of his gospel, dedicated out of 3 years of ministry. We need to look at these last 7 days. This is serious. Matthew's about a quarter of it. Luke dedicates quite a bit of his gospel to it. So this is a serious week that we're launching into, and I think it's important that we do. The church obviously thought it was important. I mean, it's amazing how God works in the midst of our imperfection. All of the junk that has happened to the church, whether it's anti-Semitism and TV and all the other stuff, somehow the church has survived it and she keeps going strong. And we look back and we have these days that the church father said, listen, we need to remember Palm Sunday. So we're going to see, well, why? Every single one of the Gospels recorded it. You know, there's a lot of events you only find in John. Other ones you only find in Luke. Or the Synoptic Gospels, right? Because they're similar. But this is one of those events that every single one of them, all four of them, said this has got to go in there. Why? We're launching into a serious week here, where we remember some serious things. So we're going to do that. I'm going to use John's version of it. It's in chapter 12. He begins in verse 12. He's probably got the shortest rendition of it, so you'll appreciate that. I took the shortest one out of him. And let's just see what John had to say about this day that we call Palm Sunday, that launches into this unprecedented week that we call Holy Week. Verse 12 of chapter 12, the Gospel of John, here's what he says. On the next day, the large crowd who had come to the feast, just so you know, that feast wasn't an Easter egg hunt. All right? It wasn't lamb at some Easter dinner. This was a Passover Seder, okay? Passover Seder. They're all there, man, for Passover week. Large crowd who had come for the feast. When they heard that Jesus was coming to Jerusalem, not Rome, not Spain, verse 13, took the branches of the palm trees. There it is. That's where it comes from. John's the only one who actually tells us that it was palm trees. Others say it was branches. John tells us specifically. They took them off the palm trees and they went out to meet him and began to shout. What did they shout? Scripture is what they shout. Prophecies that were made centuries before, and they said, this is it, man, we think it's going down. Hosanna, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord, even the King of Israel. Jesus, finding a young donkey, sat on it, as it is written, fear not, daughter of Zion, behold, your king is coming, seated on a donkey's colt. Another prophecy that they realize, and John tells you right here, they didn't get it when it was happening, but afterwards, you know, after the fact, remember I've told you that, sometimes you got to watch a movie twice. First time you watch it, like, wow, man, I got to go back now. There's some stuff in there. It's really, you know, interesting. See, they after the movie, after the whole thing happened, John says, these things, his disciples, they didn't understand it at the first, but when Jesus was glorified, then they remembered that these things were written of him and that they had done these things to him. So the people who were with him when he called Lazarus out of the tomb and raised him from the dead continued to testify about him. For this reason also the people went and met him, and because they heard that he had performed this sign. So the Pharisees said to one another, you see that what we're doing is no good. What you're doing is not doing any good. Look, the whole world has gone after them. We're losing them. They're all going after this guy. What Jesus does here is he presents himself as the perfect king, the perfect leader that actually, I think, not only the Jewish people were craving, that they were expecting for centuries. They had looked at prophecies and were waiting. But I tell you what, I think it's in each and every one of us. You look at history, it is littered with people who do crazy things when they think they finally found the right leader. We need to be led. We crave a leader. people who finally thought they found the right leader went out and slaughtered millions of people because their leader told them to do it. They thought they had finally found the right leader. We're desperate for somebody to lead us. Cults. In my own lifetime, some of you may remember the whole Jim Jones thing. Over 1,000 people killed themselves because their leader said they need to kill themselves. There's something in us that craves leadership, that craves a leader, that craves a king, and we're looking for perfection, but we're never going to find it in human leadership. It always lets us down. It always disappoints us, because that's where the human leadership is necessary, but it's not meant to fulfill or satisfy the desperate want within us for an ideal leader and a true king. C.S. Lewis put it like this. He said, "That's why our lifelong longing to be reunited with something in the universe from which we kind of feel cut off. But there's something in us that wants to be." You look at history. All the people following different leaders, building altars. We have this sense that we've been cut off from something in the universe and we crave it. It's all throughout history. Any section or time or country, you'll see it. But the thing is we feel we're cut off, and Lewis says, you know what? It's not just some neurotic fantasy, man. It's something real in here that's a vacuum. And human leadership is sort of like the appetizer, but it's not the main course. You ever go somewhere and, I don't know, I'm not all that hungry, you know, and they have hors d'oeuvres. All right, I'll have one. So you have one, you're like, geez, I didn't realize, you know what? I'm feeling hungry now. Kind of gets your juices going. You realize how hungry you are. Imagine if they don't give you the main course at that point. You know, it just kind of, it gets your juices going. But then, I remember we had friends, and they were invited over somebody's house at 5 o'clock. Now, if somebody invites you over to their house at 5 o'clock, what do you figure? Dinner, right? They got to their house. All they gave them was tea and crackers. And not too many of them. They were dying. You know, they couldn't wait to leave. He said, as soon as we got out, they went straight to the diner, man. But that's what happens, you know. Human leadership is sort of like the appetizer. But it's not it just suggests. It cannot do anything but it suggests us the main course. That's what the Bible says. It says, listen, all this stuff here we're experiencing is beautiful, but it's actually on this shadow of the real substance that awaits us when we're in eternity with God. And all this leadership stuff, we need it. We need people to lead us. We're trying to figure out who's going to lead us next come this November. And we want somebody who's going to, but it's only going to suggest, man, there's only going to be perfect leadership when Jesus returns. And these people were looking for him. They thought he was only going to come once. They didn't know there was two times. I mean, prophecy's a weird thing, man. I'm supposed to be teaching the men's group. Maybe more of you come out now. I'm supposed to be teaching in Thessalonians where he talks about the man of lawlessness, the son of perdition, the Antichrist. You know, and this is kind of embarrassing because the church gets crazy with this stuff. You know, no, he's the Antichrist. No, that one's the Antichrist, you know. And these guys couldn't figure it out the first time around, and we think we're going to be able to figure it all out the second time around. They had no clue. We'll see that later when we look at it, even more so. But the thing is that all of this is Jesus shows up and he says, listen, all of your longing for trying to find the perfect love and the perfect friend and the perfect leader and just wanting this hero to be able to follow. He says, you know what? It's Jesus you seek. It's me. See, Jesus is interesting. He's very humble, but he's not very modest. He's very humble when it comes to other people. He's for the marginalized. He's for the poor and the oppressed and the sick, and he heals them. But when it comes to him, he's not so modest. Guess what? I'm the truth. I'm the life. I'm the way. Humble, but not necessarily modest. And we're going to see he's not so modest on this day. He's saying, listen, it's decision time here. I'm just going to be outright with it. And I'm going to show you what the deal is. And what's interesting, in his leadership, he brings together this perfect harmonization of two perfect traits in a leader that nobody has ever really able to do. They almost in certain ways might look a mutually exclusive and never have been brought together in a perfect way. You have a trait of majesty and meekness, strength and weakness. And somehow in Christ, he brings these together. When John had a vision of Jesus in his glorified state, he saw it. And Revelation 5, verses, I think it was 5 and 6, and it says this. It says, he saw Jesus, and he saw his majesty, he saw his amazingness, and he explained it and called it, behold, the lion, the tribe of Judah, is strong to open the book and break the seven seals. A lion is what? The king of the forest, right? He's the most fierce and capable animal of the whole animal kingdom. And when he saw Jesus, he said, there he is, man. He's like the king of the animal. He's like a lion. But then as he meditates and he looks at the vision even more, he sees something else. Somehow harmonized in with this lion, he says, I looked and beheld, and in the midst of the throne stood a lamb that had been slain. In the midst of the most fierce and capable animal of the whole animal kingdom, then he sees the weakest and most meekest, the one that's slaughtered and used for human clothing and food. What is that? He's the most bold and bravest, yet the most sensitive. He puts all of this stuff together and he presents them perhaps more clearly than ever in that final 7 days of his life, starting with Palm Sunday. So we're going to do that. I want to look for a little bit at his majesty, that he brings forth his strength, his power, his boldness, the Lion of Judah. But at the same time on Palm Sunday, we see how it's the Lamb too. In his weakness, his meekness. And he puts it all together and harmonizes it in a way that nobody else can. When he's heading into Jerusalem, he's heading down the road. Right away we see there's, some of the gospel writers say a blind man. Matthew, I think, some of the others mentioned that it was actually two. And they're crying out, they're blind. I don't know, I think it was from birth. They hadn't been able to see. And they said, Son of David! Son of David. Now see, if you don't have a Jewish understanding, that's going to mean nothing to you. If you understand Jewish culture, man, they're saying, hey, ultimate king, the one for centuries that we've been waiting for, you're it. Have mercy on us. We know you can do it. And you know what? Jesus didn't turn around. Remember, he's humble, but he's not modest. He's like, guys, take it easy. I mean, I know I've had a pretty good ministry, but don't go around calling me the son of David, you know, ultimate king. You know what he does when they say that? He turns around and says, yes, you want something? The hair on people's necks must have stood up. I'm claiming it. Humble but not modest. Yes, what do you need? And then, of course, he's got the goods to go with it. They see, and they head on in. Crowds have gathered. There's some historians, I don't know, they estimate maybe there's a million people there that day. The apostles must have been thrilled because they were so tired of Jesus keeping this on the DL, as Brandon would say. You know, it's like he would always talk in parables, sometimes almost cryptic sentences. It's like, Jesus, man, just make it plain. You know, just tell them who you are. Come on, we've seen your power. We know what you can do. And he heals somebody. He's like, see that you tell no one. Come on, you know. Finally, he's just letting it rip. He said, it's time. It's time now. We're gonna let people know the deal. And these throngs of people are saying, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Another messianic proclamation that they had looked at for centuries, that this is what we say. This is the day we're looking for. And they're saying, this is it. We think this is it. And Jesus doesn't tell them to be quiet. In fact, in Luke's gospel, the religious leaders say, Jesus, would you tell them to chill out? You hear what they're saying? Come on. We know you're a good teacher, but this is a little over the top. Jesus says, let me tell you something. If you don't let them speak, the very rocks are going to start crying out. What kind of an answer is that? Not too modest. All of nature adores and is longing to worship me. In fact, many commentators think that Jesus actually took charge and maybe set this up more than we're willing to admit. You know, when you look at Palm Sunday and you see him ride into Jerusalem, you just kind of think, oh, word got around. Hey, Jesus is coming. Really? Come on, let's go, you know. And he happened to ride in and he's sort of like, oh, shucks, folks, I'm speechless. I can't believe you all gathered around like this. They think he was very intentional about it. He was 2 miles outside of Jerusalem the night before. You read this section in John just before we get to Palm Sunday. This is wild stuff, man. He is at Lazarus' house with his sisters, Mary and Martha. And he's eating dinner with them. Listen, I've never seen it. I know everybody's like, not everybody, there's a lot of people that are into that show, The Walking Dead, right? You know, and there's zombies. You think that's a cool show, man? Check out this. We got The Walking Dead, and he's not a zombie. He's having dinner with Jesus. And it says the crowds are gathering around because this corpse is alive and having dinner with Jesus. I mean, The Walking Dead is hanging out with Jesus. Here's what it says, John 12, verses 9 through 11. And it wasn't just a few people. It says, John used this terminology. He says, the large crowd. Large. Large crowd of the Jews. Again, not Germans or Italians, sorry. Then learned that he was there. And they came not just for Jesus' sake, but they wanted to get a glimpse of Lazarus who was raised from the dead. They're trying to get a look. Oh, there he is. He just had some gefilte fish. Yeah, I see him in there. You know? I mean, that's just blowing their minds away. This corpse is hanging out. Is it really true? There he is, man. Just had another pizza matzah. You know? But the chief priest, it says, planned to put Lazarus to death also. Because on account of him, many of the Jews were going away and believing in Jesus. I mean, he was dead one day longer than even Jesus was. And he rose him from the dead. So Jesus is spending the night in Bethany. I think he's sending out emissaries. Listen, tomorrow I'm going to proclaim it. They're all hanging around. Yeah, man, there he is. He could see him. You know, he's alive. Yeah, well, Jesus, go tell him tomorrow's the day, man. I'm going to announce who I am. Tell them to come on into Jerusalem. We're not going to hide this thing anymore. I'm going to just let them know right up front what's going on. And it looks like in the Gospels, now this is the only, John is the only one who doesn't have this. The other three have this, where he sends a couple of his disciples to go get the donkey. And it looks like it's kind of prearranged. You know, like he says, listen, when you get into the entrance at the village, you're going to see this little baby donkey tied up with his, I like what Matthew says, you know. Matthew shows us that Jesus was a pet owner, you know. It's a little prejudice here with 3 cats and a dog over there, but he says, he instructed them to bring the little baby donkey's mother with them. You know, I didn't want to separate him from his mother, so it's believed that they brought the mother with the baby donkey. But he says, when you get there, and you're going to see it tied up, kind of look like maybe it was prearranged, you know. And he gets there, and he says, listen, if they ask you, what are you doing? What are you taking my mules for? Just tell them that the Lord has need of it, and it'll be a cool deal. Tell them we'll bring it back, too. I think maybe it is his popularity. It says large crowds. I think it could have just been as easy that he said, don't worry about it, go in there. If they're asking you, just say Jesus needs it and they'll be cool with it. It's like, you know, let's get the baby. Oh, wait, what are you doing there? Jesus says he wants to use your mule to go into Jerusalem. Take it, man. Be my guest. He said he'll bring it back. All right, listen, just take it. I mean, it was a big deal. And he did it intentionally. Now, see, Jesus is setting himself up. It was a known thing, though it totally mystified, I think, the rabbis And we'll talk about that in a minute. But Zechariah the prophet, about 500 years before Jesus rides in, made a prophecy that the Messiah was going to ride in on a baby donkey. So Jesus is setting himself up to specifically fulfill this prophecy. He says, listen, I'm proclaiming myself. These guys know that when the Messiah shows up, he's going to ride into Jerusalem on a baby donkey. So I'm going to ride into Jerusalem and get me that baby donkey because I want them to know this is no more cryptic stuff, man. Here it is, flat out. I'm going to let them know. I'm the Messiah. I'm proclaiming it. I'm the king. And he goes in and he rides it. And I think throngs came from Bethsaida and Bethpage and the people that were trying to see Lazarus and other crowds that were there for Passover. And they came in and it said they were laying down their cloaks and they're taking the palm branches. You know what this is, people? This is an ancient Jewish version of a New York ticker tape parade. That's what it is. You know, what are they? The Canyon of Heroes, they call it, right? Downtown, when you, Apollo 11, I'm bold enough, you know, I'm an old man, I can remember Apollo 11 heroes going down the Canyon of Heroes, you know. Ticker tape, which, of course, hasn't been used, I guess, since the 60s or something, so now we throw down confetti or whatever. But that's what this was. Jesus is allowing himself to be adored, venerated as the Messiah, and worshiped. Worshiped. Humble, but not modest. Not too modest. He's coming in, and you know what he's doing? He's forcing. He's forcing everybody's hand. He's saying, listen, it's decision time right now. You can't just say, oh, he's a nice little rabbi. You know, yeah, he's a pretty good teacher. Oh, no. It's decision time here. You need to decide. You know what? You're either going to have to crown me or kill me. There's nothing in between. You're either going to have to accept him or reject him. But the one thing you can't do is like what I said, you know, he's kind of an interesting guy. See, Jesus, man, he's bringing it downtown. He's not going to stay and just let us hang out in the peripheral in Bethany or Bethpage, you know, and kind of like add Jesus to your life. He's like, I'm bringing it down into Jerusalem. You don't just add me to your life. Yeah, you know, I'll go to church on Palm Sunday, maybe Easter. Maybe I'll go to church on Sunday. You don't add Jesus to your life. He is to be your life. It's decision time, people. He's bringing it downtown. He's riding into Jerusalem. And he's riding into your heart. It's either yes or no. You know that old saying. He's either Lord of all or he's just not Lord at all. It's kind of what he's saying here. But it's not just the Lion of Judah, and we'll end with this. He's not just riding in as the Lion of Judah. He's riding in not only in his majesty as the Lion of Judah, but in meekness as the Lamb. On this little, lowly, meek, baby mule. Zechariah 9:9. Now, John quotes it. Many of the other gospel writers quote it too, straight up. These are Jewish guys. They knew their prophecies. They said, this is it, man. We didn't get it at the time, but now we see he was fulfilling Zechariah 9:9. Zechariah 9:9 says, behold, your king is coming to you, humble and mounted on a donkey, even on a colt, the foal of a donkey. Could you imagine how confusing that must have been for rabbis trying to figure out that? They knew it had been, through the ages, had been pointed out as a messianic prophecy. This is how the Messiah is going to ride into Jerusalem on a baby donkey. I don't get it. This guy's supposed to come in and deliver us from the oppression of the other empires. You don't do that on a baby donkey. Let me tell you, if a king wants to lead an army in to conquer your enemies, he better be on a stallion or a war horse. he comes in on a baby donkey. He's going to get slaughtered. Why, you just might be onto something there. But of course, it's easy for us. We're on the other side. John said, listen, verse 16, these things his disciples didn't understand at first until he was glorified. Then we got it. Yeah. I like the way author Reynolds Price, I saw a quote by this guy, died back in 2011. He was a teacher over at Duke and a strong believer in higher education. Boy, do we need those. They're just rocking. TK was praying today about kids graduating and going into college, and you get these smart professors that just undermine faith. Man, let's pray professors in, man. This guy stood firm for years right in Duke. And he says, you know what? Jesus' ministry was either madness or it's blinding revelation. This book here is either a record that is complete madness. I mean, come on. Guy built a boat. He saved the entire animal kingdom and humanity. Really? He split the Red Sea and they all walked through it. A man rose from the dead. Listen, this record, people, is either madness or it's blinding revelation. Decision time. Decision time. That's what Jesus says. You're either for me or you're against me. For years, the rabbis are baffled at this stuff. And Jesus says to them, listen, if I just come in and liberate you from the Romans, what good is that? What is that going to do? You're still going to die. You're still going to have your guilt. You're still going to have to deal with a meaningless existence. When you overcome the political oppression, what are you going to do about your personal oppression? I've come to deliver you, Jesus says, from something that's a lot more formidable than just being enslaved by the Romans, man. I've come to deliver you from death. I don't come with political clout. I come with spiritual clout and weakness to lay my life down where yours deserves to be, to pay the penalty for all the sin that death is a result of. See, when Jesus comes in, and then we get to Good Friday, and you see this perfect harmonization of the Lion of Judah and the Lamb of weakness comes together at the cross. We're going to look at that more on Friday, and I hope you'll come out and hear Mikey on Friday. I want to just say I'm so grateful for your support and your graciousness to Brandon last week and how many came to the altar. People, we got to support our young people. Are we going to hand on this baton or what? You know, it's humbling for him. Mikey probably feels like, oh, what am I going to teach these people? They were going to church before I was born. Hey, we need to humble ourselves and let's let the younger teach the older. Jesus on the cross harmonizes. He harmonizes the lion with the lamb. Because in his weakness, his strength is revealed. What do you mean? Oh, yeah. People, it takes a lot more guts. It takes a lot more backbone and courage and bravery to put your head down on the chopping block where everybody else's head really should be. You know, we love to venerate soldiers who die by killing other people, but Jesus says, I'm going to die while loving other people. You want to see some bravery, you want to see some courage, you want to see some guts. In weakness, as I lay myself down as a lamb to be slaughtered. We got to meet Jesus on both planes, people. You're not just riding into Jerusalem, you know, some nice historic little event. He's looking to ride into our hearts as the Lion of Judah, and he says, listen, I'm either Lord, I'm King of all, or I'm not Lord at all. But yet he comes as a meek lamb where he humbles himself, which in turn causes us to humble ourselves, because I have to admit, And you have to admit that my sin is so bad it cost him his life. The lion and the lamb. He saves us through his sacrifice on our behalf. And we have to do that daily. Luke chapter 9 says, any man wants to follow me, pick up his cross and maybe pay a church a visit on Palm Sunday. If you get a chance, if it's convenient. Well, some of you maybe even once a week, maybe on Sunday. No. Anybody wants to follow me, you got to pick up your cross daily. Daily. Every day. God help me. When I get up, I want you to be the lion in my life today, God. You are Lord. Only you. And it's only by your grace that you'll be Lord, because I'm such a sinner. It cost you your life to have to pay. I mean, the only reason I even came to New York is I was so full of myself. It's embarrassing to admit. You know, Joel says, oh, yeah, some guys, it's just a natural expression. They're so into music. You know, I was really into music, but I wanted the accolades, man. You know, I wanted to be cheered. I wanted women chasing me. You know, it's like, that's why I came to New York. What the heck is that, man? We've all got that sick thing within us. Come on. God, in his mercy, took me off a stupid drum stool and stuck me behind a pulpit. Man, that's crazy. Lion of Judah, the lamb of sacrifice. You know what? We do that daily. We'll become people and we'll become a people. A church that is beyond anything we could imagine. It's like we can hear the crowds, their chants echoing down through the corridors of time, telling us once again, you know what? Blessed are they. Blessed are they that come in the name of the Lord. Let's do that. Let's just bow our heads.